Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, coming to you live, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. It's a lovely sunny day here in Bushwick, and you're tuned into the Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks, and today we are on the line with a very dear friend, Margot Brooks of the Sugar House Creamery. Margot, welcome to the show.
Hi, Erin. Thanks for having me on.
So I'm excited to kind of tuck into your most recent and ambitious adventures. But before we do, I want to give folks a little bit of a sense of your background. Now, we met when you were working as a cheesemaker and then a farm manager up at Consider Bardwell Farm. So can you tell us how you got from, you know, college to Consider Bardwell and then, you know, about your most recent transition?
Sure. Well, I went to college at St. Lawrence University, which is in far northern New York State. Before that, I grew up on a dairy farm in central New York. And after college, sort of my senior year of college, I started thinking more and more about, I was a biology major and was taking a lot of conservation biology classes, and I started thinking more and more about returning to my family's farm and kind of continuing the tradition there, maybe diversifying things a bit. And my senior year, sort of the wheels started turning about that. And I knew in order to go back to my family's farm and actually make a living there or generate more income for the family farm, I would need to learn how to make a value-added product out of milk, which was the main focus of my family's farm. So I started putting feelers out here and there, just emailing the different places I found online that made cheese in the Northeast. So I sent emails to cheesemakers in Maine and Vermont and New York and all over the place. And I just ended up getting an email back from one cheesemaker in particular, or farm in particular, which was Consider Bardwell Farm. And they had just lost a cheesemaker and had an opening, and so they asked me to come out for an interview, and I went, and that's how it all started.
And that's how you started. And how long were you at Consider Bardwell?
I was there from June 2008 until this past October, so October of 2012.
And obviously you weren't there alone. You were there with your partner, Alex Eaton, who is up at the creamery with you now as well, correct?
Yep, that's right. I started at Consider Bardwell as a cheesemaker, and I kind of, they had another opening shortly after I started for a herd person, someone to help out on the farm with the goats. At that time, they were milking around 45, Oberhosleys, and so I kind of pushed and pushed for Alex, and he came up for an interview and ended up getting a job there as well, and we both stayed on there for quite some time.
Nice. Well, so after, you know, kind of the experience that you gained at Consider Bardwell, I mean, you guys decided it was time to pursue your own operation. And at this point, you know, you growing up on a dairy farm and then Alex and you working together on both the, you know, you on the cheese side and then both of you on the farming side, I feel like you had enough experience under your belt to kind of know what you were getting into. So can you talk about like that next step? You're like, okay, we're ready. We're looking for a place. I mean, how does one kind of go about that? What was your criteria with regards to geography or price? How did you even get started in that search process?
Yeah. So, it just reached a certain point where we felt like, you know, we just had that itch to try it on our own and try our own thing. And we were interested in just the whole the whole thing, just from start to finish, making a product that you could stand behind and that represented you and that you represented. And so we just kind of casually started looking, putting, you know, just it was kind of a fun thing just to look at real estate. And it wasn't very serious in the beginning. We just kind of would poke around online, and mostly in Vermont, because that's where we were at the time. We really loved Vermont. We liked the kind of the sustainable ag scene that was happening there. It's just a lot of small farms, a lot of just innovative little products being made. So we were focusing mostly on Vermont, but what we were finding is that the property that was for sale there was just inhibitively expensive. It just was always like, well, we could never, ever afford this. So we just started to think, well, maybe we should, we shouldn't be so focused on Vermont. Maybe we should extend our search. And I was pretty, you know, there's definitely cheaper farm properties in central New York area where I grew up, but there isn't much of a local food movement happening there. There's not much of a market. And what we really wanted was a place where we could farm and sell a product within a local radius, not have to necessarily drive it really far to an urban center. So we both were familiar with the Adirondacks because of going to school at St. Lawrence and kind of being in this area a little bit from that. And so we just kind of started looking a little bit in the Adirondacks, and we ended up finding this this farm just in one of our searches, and decided to take a drive up here one Sunday and look at it, and that's how it all started.
So once you kind of like found a property that you felt like was the kind of size and scope and you know, accessible from a price percentage. And I want to talk about the financial aspect a little bit, because obviously you and Alex had been working as cheesemakers and then farmers. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, well, I'm sure you were able to make a living. It's not a particularly lucrative field. And when you're looking to make a purchase, like buying a farm, I mean, where does that capital come from? How did you guys save for that and plan for that? And what were some of the support systems that allowed you to purchase your farm?
Sure. That was always a big question for us too. Like we wanted to do it, but didn't really know how that was all going to transpire. And but when we finally did, we came up and looked at this property for the first time, and the real estate listing that we had looked at really didn't have, it didn't include a lot of photos of the place or anything, so we didn't have a good idea of what we would even find when we got here. But what we found were there were two houses on the property, some really nice farm infrastructure, a really nice barn, and a few other outbuildings, and the location was just really great. It's about 5 minutes from Whiteface Mountain, about 15 minutes from Lake Placid and some other kind of tourist centers where there's year-round kind of visitors coming to the area. And we just felt this great potential to actually create a viable farm business here on a really small scale. So the first, you know, we looked at it, just the two of us, the first time, and then thought about it more and more after seeing it that first time, and decided to reach out to Alex's folks, Alex's parents, and bring them up here and have them take a look at it too, and then together kind of hatched a plan for how we might be able to actually make an offer and purchase the property. And so we just kind of pitched it to them as a business opportunity and an investment in us. And we really, you know, they were very fortunate that they are more than supportive of us and what we want to do. And they knew that we were serious. We had quite a bit of experience under our belts, although, you know, you can never have too much, I don't think. But they knew that we were serious. We weren't just this wasn't just a passing fancy for us. We really wanted to do this, and we had ideas for how we could make it work. And so we made an offer together with them. And so now we ended up getting the place. So we have a mortgage that we pay to Max and Susan, who are Alex's parents.
And so the business that you're looking to create, because I don't think we actually told anybody what that was, is what?
That is a small kind of micro raw milk dairy and cheese making operation. So what we hope to do is milk 12 cows, which is about what our pasture base can support, at least initially. We'll be selling raw milk from the farm and also making some cheeses. So mostly we're just going to concentrate on making a few, maybe just even two varieties of cheese and just doing them really well. And one of the big investments that we made was in a underground cheese aging cave. It's a very beautiful structure. It's 10 feet wide by 20 feet long with an arched ceiling that's 10 feet high, and it'll be buried 5 feet underground, so it should maintain a constant 50 to 52 degree temperature and just create some excellent aged raw cheeses. So that's going to be our main business.
Lovely. And what do you anticipate the timeline between the purchase of the farm and when, you know, you're going to actually be in cheese production mode? And maybe let's, you know, take a moment to kind of walk through what those steps are. But what's the goal for kind of, you know, the first sale of cheese from a time perspective?
Sure. So we ended up buying the property in August of last year, so actually right around now, 1 year ago. And but we had to, you know, transition out of our roles as farm managers at Consider Bardwell Farm, and so we didn't actually move here until October of last year. And that's really when we hope to be making some product this year.
Wow.
And maybe by product, it might only just be the raw milk sales initially, and then we'll have the creamery online by November. But we still are hoping that we can actually be making cheese by October, but we'll see.
We'll see
how all these projects, how quickly they move along before we can be making cheese, so.
So, I mean, one of the things that you guys were focused on with regards to your property search was being in an area that could support the products you were making that had kind of a year-round tourist or consumer base that would purchase your items. But I'm curious, on the other end, from the farming infrastructure perspective, how that kind of worked into your decision making and how you're finding the community now that you're there and you're kind of looking to be building out your operation, and you're looking for different equipment with regards to tractor supply or large animal vets, what your experience has been from the farming infrastructure aspect.
Sure. Yeah, that's been a really interesting part of moving here and figuring it all out. We definitely kind of glossed that over when we were looking at the property. We were focused more on marketability of product and location in terms of just being able to sell whatever we make. And we didn't really appreciate the fact that there weren't other farms in the immediate area, and especially not dairy farms, which makes our product all the more marketable, but also makes it a bit difficult when you're getting started because there isn't that infrastructure in place. There isn't a feed store just down the road. There isn't an agway. There isn't a tractor supply, and large animal vet. That's a big one. So it's been difficult because we actually do have some animals now. We have 3 cows, and well, two are heifers that haven't yet had any calves, but they are bred, and the other one just had her calf about 40 days ago, so we're milking her twice a day. And, of course, when you have animals, you just have situations that arise, and it would be really nice to just be able to go next door like we could in Vermont and just borrow X, Y, or Z from a neighbor, you know, bale of hay or some Ixamal to put on a sore foot or, you know, just anything, you name it. But here we can't at all. So it makes it a lot harder whenever any little situation arises to deal with that. So we have to...
Sure.
We're learning that we have to plan into it. So when we do make that hour-long trip to Plattsburgh, we have to stock up way more and anticipate any future needs we might have. It is more costly that way because you're just trying to... You have to spend a lot of money to build up your inventory of your arsenal of things.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like anyone who's experienced a move, you know, you show up and you reach for the dish soap or the toilet bowl cleaner or whatever it may have you. And there's all those kind of unexpected costs that find their way into your life. Well, Margot, hang tight. We are going to move to just a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the projects that you mentioned and get a sense of how things are going. But we'll take a quick break. So hang tight.
And this one's called Girl, I'm a Freak, from the full-service pasta movie EP. And as you know, you're listening to The Farm Report on heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
All right, thanks. We are back. You've tuned into the Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks, and we're on the line with Margot Brooks of the Sugar House Creamery. So, Margot, you know, you and Alex kind of pack your bags and drive up to the new property, and I'm wondering, I'm sure that you sat down and you started kind of making a list of what were the things that you were going to need to do before you were going to be able to be in operation. So maybe you can take us through some of those main projects, and then we'll go back through and kind of tuck into where they're at.
Sure, yeah. So one of our big things was, well, what are we going to do when we arrive at this farm in October and we don't have any income and, you know, how are we going to make this work? So when they actually accepted the offer that we made on the property, we right away started in on working on the rental. We have two houses, as I mentioned, on the property. So one we decided would be a rental house. And if we could rent it for $900 a month, then that would pay the taxes on the property. So we knew that we had to do that. So we would come up on weekends and just work on that house, get it ready to rent. It didn't need too much, but it did need some kind of aesthetic alterations and just, you know, good cleaning and little things. So we made that our first goal, was to get that all ready. And one of the things we also did with that house is we separated off one little back area, which had its own self-enclosed. It was kind of a, I think it was like a guest annex for like a mother-in-law or something. So it had its own bathroom, and it was actually metered separately from the rest of the house already. So we just put up a wall to separate it completely from the rest of that house, and we decided to make that a little Airbnb room. And so those were our two main goals, was to get the house rentable and have this little Airbnb room, so that we knew we could have, you know, we didn't have any way of knowing how it would work, if we would actually get guests that would want to stay there, but at least we had something that we could make income on. And then we knew we needed to get jobs right away, so we just went out and started looking, and pretty quickly actually found some jobs. So I found a job as a waitress at a local cafe, and Alex found a job working at a retail store in town. It's just, you know, a 5-minute drive, and so we took full-time jobs right away. So going into winter, we knew we had work and we had some income from the rental in the Airbnb room. And so then once we were here, we were doing those things, and we just started writing our business plan. So that was what we worked on most of the winter, was just getting our business plan together so that we could go out and actually get some startup capital.
So the winter is passing, you're both working full-time, essentially off the farm. Talk to us a little bit about the capital program. I mean, how did that go for you guys? Was it like, you know, you walked into the bank, you're like, hey, we're here, we're great, give us money, and the bank was like, yes, here you go, get started? Or was it maybe not quite that smooth?
It wasn't quite that smooth, but so what we ended up doing was, you know, working on our business plan, and we have some really good advisors in both of our families, so we keep editing and running by them, and we just got it to crunched all the numbers. We just did a lot of market research and just really fleshed out the business plan to get it, you know, we really wanted that to look really nice and professional when we took it out and shopped it around. So we got that to a point where we felt really good about it, and then we put on our best clothing, our nicest farm pants, and we took it first to the Adirondack Economic Development Corporation, because we knew that, from what we'd heard, you know, out and about, that is that conventional lenders don't really want to lend to farms. They just don't understand farms. They don't feel comfortable lending to farms, really. So we ended up going to the Adirondack Economic Development Corporation with our business plan, and the guy there was very nice, and he told us that they lend money, but they don't. They only lend once you've been denied by a conventional lender. So, so then we came back home and we kind of recollected ourselves, and we decided to reach out to a farm lending association, Yankee Farm Credit, they're called, and they have a branch in Middlebury, Vermont, and that branch services this area of New York. So we got in touch with them, and we started the process through them. So there were some applications we had to fill out, and they had to come out and look at the property, look at the farm, and meet us. And we just kind of kept moving through that process all winter. And one big thing that was helpful in getting our startup loan was that we could, because we have the mortgage on the farm through Max and Susan, Alex's parents, we could use the farm as an asset in our favor. So we could essentially leverage the farm against the money we were trying to borrow. So that's that was huge. But they were also, they actually were, I don't think we could have gotten the startup loan if we didn't have the business plan as well done as we did. They were very impressed with the business plan we had done and with the experience that we had gained at Consider Bardwell. That really, really, really helped us.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I think after kind of putting in, you know, almost 4 years of work, there is a certain level of like, okay, these kids are serious. So you were looking to get the loan to purchase what? What did you need to, and what are you working on to kind of get things operational?
Well, we needed, the farm just the farm property here included a really nice big 1920s gamble, Dutch gamble style dairy barn, which was in beautiful condition, but it did not have a milk house. It didn't have any. It still doesn't have any plumbing in it. Didn't have water running to it. It was just kind of, I think, back in the 20s, they milked in it, but they just had a spring house, so it was a spring-fed cistern, and they it never really got milked in after that, so they didn't upgrade any of the infrastructure, so it was just kind of a bare-bones barn. So we needed to build a milk house. We needed to build a creamery or a cheese processing facility. We really wanted to put in this cave, which we built, to age cheeses and be able to do that through a passively cooled system, so not having to constantly cool a space to age cheeses, but just have it be buried underground. And then we needed a winter housing structure. So the current barn, or the barn that was here, was we planned to use for milking in, but not for actually housing cows in. It's kind of an old tie stall barn, so a barn where cows would have been tied in all the time. And we really wanted a barn where the cows could loaf in an open space in the winter and not be tied in. And so we needed money to build that barn. And just kind of your basic startup costs, we needed a cheese vat, a bulk tank, all the sinks and just little equipment pieces that we would need, a tractor, and then we also factored in 5 months of operating capital just to get us started. For the first, like, buying cheese cultures, buying all our soaps, all of our detergents and things we need to use to wash, our hay, our grain. So there's a lot of capital that needs to go into starting an operation like this.
Sure.
Which is why not a lot of farmers make that jump into processing from just dairy farming, because it is very expensive.
Yeah, and a lot of moving parts. Now, you guys were both working off the farm throughout the winter, but are you both still kind of accomplishing all of this work and working off farm, or how are you making a living now?
So once we actually secured the loan for the startup loan, which was back in May, the very end of May, prior to actually getting the loan, we were just kind of doing what we could without money, you know, just breaking down. The barns that were here were kind of filled with junk and needed to be cleaned out and cleared out. And the space where we wanted to put the creamery and the milk house needed to be deconstructed, kind of the siding ripped off, the walls cleaned out. So we were able to do that while we were working our off-farm jobs and before we had any real money to work with. We had to get a few dumpsters and fill those full of stuff and just kind of clear out spaces and get them prepped for the major construction. And once we got the loans, Alex cut back to working part-time at his job, and I still stayed on full-time. So we had decided beforehand that I could make more money as a waitress than he could as a salesman at a store. And he could be of more use here on the farm than I could during this construction period. So my primary perfect role right now is just kind of the sugar mama waitressing. And actually the Airbnb room I mentioned before is helping out a lot. Actually, it's the location is good, and it's one of those social media type websites, Airbnb, where people review you after they stay in your room, and the more reviews you get, the kind of snowballs, and you get more and more business. So we've had that rented out quite a bit, and it's actually doing pretty well, so we're managing that all along. We cook breakfast for guests when they stay, and they get to, you know, it's also a little way to promote our future business. So we give them a tour, and we, you know, put a little business card in the room, so that's a good way to promote the future business. But so I'm still working full-time. Alex is working part-time, and we're now that we have the loan, we're able to really start spending some money. So that's mostly what we're doing.
So now that you've been in the community for, you know, coming up on just about a year, you know, are you finding, like, can you give us a sense of, like, what the, a little flavor of the local color up there, what the people are like, and anything that you know, we're kind of surprised by or have been surprised by with how people are, you know, receiving you in the community?
Yeah, sure. So one of the hidden benefits of me waitressing at some of the local restaurants is that I can just shamelessly self-promote and talk to all my tables about what I'm doing and what Alex and I are doing and the farm and future cheese. And so I've just been able to meet a ton of people, and everyone is just really receptive. People are really encouraging and excited, and I think that's also part of being a young farmer and just being young and starting probably any business, is that you know, people get excited for you, and they really root for you, and they want you to succeed. They want you to do well, and they want to support you. And so we, right now, we're just in this period where we're really anxious to get some product out there, because we've been talking ourselves up so much and getting people excited. And now they're, every time, you know, you see someone, they're like, when's the cheese coming? They're just waiting for it. And but that's been a really cool thing, is that people up here seem to be really excited and anxious. They, I mean, they see what's happening across the lake in Vermont, and they see they're very excited about the local food movement. But in the Adirondacks, there aren't many farms. It's kind of traditionally a logging area. The land is, the soil's not very great. The land's a little rough. And so they don't have that local food availability like they do, or like you find in Vermont. So they're just excited to have it starting over here. And we're not the only farm that's just starting out. There are a couple others, also in various degrees of startup right around here, just mostly just north of us. So people, there really seems to be an energy here that was less so in Vermont. There was a lot of local food happening in Vermont, but it was more, you know, the wave had already come, and it was like it had already crested, and people were kind of, it was just becoming normal. And here it's just, you know, we're in the front of the wave.
Yeah, you're pioneers. Well, so for folks who want to come up and hang in the Airbnb room or follow your progress as you guys work towards the, you know, first kind of wheel or tub of cheese, what's the best way for folks to stay in touch?
Yeah, so we've been trying to stay on top of our blog. We keep a Tumblr blog at sugarhousecreamery.tumblr.com, and Tumblr is spelled T-U-M-B-L-R. And that's, we try to post a few times a week, post a picture and just a little, you know, what's going on the farm thing, and mostly probably just for our parents and grandparents to look at. But we'd love for anyone who's interested to follow our progress. And we have a website, but it's empty. There's just a link to our blog on it right now. But we do hope to have a nice website at some point in the future.
Excellent. And then the Airbnb, do folks just search you through there? Or how if they want to come up to stay for the weekend or during the week, how do they find you on that?
Oh, yeah. So on Airbnb, if you just search, our room is called Adirondack Farmhouse Suite, but if you just search anywhere in Keene, New York, or Upper Jay, New York, our room is one of the first ones that comes up because of that review process I was talking about. And we have had a lot of people stay, and every time we get a review, it kind of bumps us up on the search results. So if you look for J New York, Upper J New York, or just put in Adirondack Farmhouse Suite, you'll find our room.
Awesome. Margo, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to making the trip up myself and tasting some of the cheese and getting to hang out with you and Alex. Want to send a big thank you and hello to him and Stella, my old friend. Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me, Erin.
We'll be in touch soon. So thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Farm Report. Stay tuned next Thursday. We'll be talking with Olivia Blanchflower from Grow NYC's Co., their wholesale market. So tune in for that. This episode, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, is available for free via our website, or you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Smart Radio. We are a member-supported organization, so if you like what you're hearing and want to support our work, please click that Donate tab and become a member today. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned in.
Whole Foods. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.